have Senator Murphy, Senate File 454, before us. Senator Murphy.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members. Senate File 454 is simply a bill that will start treating our National Guard and Reserve members the way that they should in regards to taxation purposes when they are doing training and other activities outside of the state of Minnesota. Currently, some of our soldiers that have went to do training outside of the borders of the state or to help provide hurricane relief or do border patrol are being taxed. And if they were called up under, this is my understanding, if they were called up under Title 10 to serve, then they are not taxed by the state of Minnesota. But if they're on Title 32, they are. So what this bill does is simply encapsulate those Guard and Reservist members that are serving under Title 32 so that their pay is not taxed. And with me today is Colonel Alness, who can talk in great detail about this subject. Colonel, if you want to make some comments.
Colonel, welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Colonel Eric Alness, Department of Military Affairs. As the Senator well stated before, that there are two U.S. codes that soldiers and service members fall under when called to active duty. And currently, the interpretation by the Department of Revenue is that active duty is defined by Title 10, which is correct. All the active component armed services and most of the reserve armed forces when serving outside of Minnesota serve under Title 10. However, your National Guard and the reservists when operating in Minnesota or the National Guard when operating under operational Title 32 outside of the state of Minnesota or serving outside of the state of Minnesota serves under Title 32. The current interpretation provides the tax relief for Title 10 but not Title 32. This legislation would rectify this inequity and provide the same tax treatment for your National Guard as the Army Reserve and other active components currently enjoy.
Mr. Chairman, that's a short and a quick. You know, I can't fault the department for interpreting the law the way that they have, knowing how we tax retired veterans' military benefits and some of the other tax law that we have regarding either active duty or retired veterans. But, you know, in this day and age when these young men and women, half are from greater Minnesota, are being called at, to serve their country, I just think the state of Minnesota needs to back off on the taxation a little bit. Most of these people have jobs in their private life that are that pay a lot better than military pay. And anybody that's been in the military knows that you know, the pay's not all that great, but boy, you know, it gives you a good feeling wearing the uniform. But that good feeling doesn't make the house payment or the car payment. It doesn't put braces on Susie's teeth or send Johnny off to school. You know, the more bite that we take out of their paycheck, the less that those families are able to do that, because we all know when, you know, when you do go to provide hurricane relief or border patrol, you know, you're setting aside a $50,000, $60,000, $70,000 career to go take up a job that might pay $20,000 or $22,000. And, you know, it's unfortunate, but that's just the way it is. And these young men and women have made that commitment to go ahead and do that, and I think that it's up to us. It's imperative that we support their mission. Mr. Chairman, I would hope that this would go on. I know that the way Senator Pogamiller ran the tax committee, he had different lists, but I think this would be an A-list item.
Senator Murphy, the Tax Committee doesn't have a scoring system anymore. It left with the last chair. But the problem we have today to know exactly where it might be included is we don't have the fiscal note yet. Mm-hmm. We expect to have that on Thursday, so we'll know what it costs. Mm-hmm. But, Sir Murphy, it seems like a reasonable consideration to make.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And, you know, I can't see how this is going to have a huge number on it. And I don't believe that the tails are any bigger than what the original number would be. So I just don't see this as being a one, I don't see it being a money issue. I think it's an issue of fairness. And the way that the law is being interpreted right now, once again, I can't blame the department, but I would say that it's unfair. I don't believe the legislature has given the department the right guidance. And maybe it's an unfairness on our part, but I think we need to clean this up,
anything
regardless
else?
Of the cost.
Members of the committee, anything else? General Squay?
Sure.
Senate file 454 will be laid over for possible inclusion in the committee bill. All in favor, signify by saying aye.
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 Contrary, no. Motion prevails.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members.
Senator Lorie. Senator Lorie, welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Members, Senate File 692.
Yes, we're here to present Senate File 692. I have with me the mayor of Cloquet, Bruce Algren, and Brian Fitzinger, the city administrator of Cloquet. This bill is for a authorization for a local option sales tax, and I'm not going to sit here and presume that I'm going to explain to you how a local option sales tax works. I think you're all very familiar with it, but I am going to tell a little bit about my personal experience with Cloquet and the fact that they really are a regional center. I live in a rural area about 40 miles south, have most of my life, and have gone to Cloquet and have never had to pay any taxes to Cloquet because I don't live there. But I've gone and used their services my whole life. You know, their parks, their library, their utilities, and gone there for business transactions. And they really are a true regional center that is utilized by a much broader community and have had a great deal of troubles. I will also note that one thing rather unique about Cloquet is that they're in a whole pack of cities that all have local option sales taxes in use today. Duluth, Hermantown, Proctor, and Two Harbors, all of the cities around them of comparable size have local option sales taxes, and Cloquet has not to date been able to get one, despite efforts at least for 5 to 7 years to get this local option sales tax. So I am going to ask for your support in Cloquet's efforts here. The mayor and the city administrator will talk a little bit more about what they're trying to do with this, but we're talking about park improvements, community pool, riverfront developments, veterans park developments, a soccer complex, and we're also talking about utilities and improvements for their industrial park and including debt service of existing bonds. We're talking about a authorization to allow them to put to the voters an option to raise up to $15 million over up to a 30-year period, the lesser of those two. And so I will ask for your support and turn it over to Mayor Algren and Administrator Brian Fitzinger to explain a little bit more.
Mayor, welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Senator Lorie. Chairman Bach, members of the committee, I would like to just explain a little bit about the city of Cloquet and its regional significance and the things that we do for our entire region. Cloquet is a small town in northeastern Minnesota. It's about 12,500 people, 20 miles from Duluth. And we do service the surrounding area, cities of Esco, Scanlon, Carlton, Renshaw, actually cities in southern St. Louis County, Brookston, Floodwood, Cromwell, and also Moose Lake and other areas that use our services. At the present time, Cloquet has one of the only cities that has a significant library, and people from the townships and all the other cities use that but don't pay any taxes to keep the library going. We also have a senior center, which is probably used more by the rural people than the citizens of Cloquet that we provide for. Also, with our fire and ambulance and ALS first responder service, we go about three times outside the limits of the city of Cloquet for very little money. And at the present time, with the way things are, we're probably going to have to start charging what those runs are worth, and or not do it at all, which would be not good for the people that are in serious condition and need our services. And we've done that as far as Floodwood, which is about 35, 40 miles away from us, and all the way down to Moose Lake and other areas. One of the biggest things that in the city of Cloquet is that we are always on the top five in taxes. And one of the reasons for that is that we have a very large reservation in our area. 50% of the reservations within the boundaries of the city of Cloquet. In 1854, the federal government had a treaty with the Fongelec Band of Chippewa. What they did, however, is they said you don't have to pay personal property taxes. So without paying those personal property taxes, the rest of the citizens of Cloquet have to make up for the use of the fire, the police, although they do have civil regulatory police on the Fongelec Reservation. Part of the problem is that they don't have to pay for roads, maintenance, water, sewer, and police and fire and ambulance. We, the citizens, have to pay for that. We've asked the federal government to take a look at that and asked if they would reimburse the city of Cloquet for their treaty. And so far, we have not had any response in 4 years, and I doubt that we'll have any in the next four or five, maybe ever, from the federal government for that treaty. One of the things that Senator Laurie did say is that all the other cities in our area through the years, and we've been trying to get a sales tax for 7 years for some relief. The cities of Duluth, Hermantown, Proctor, and Two Harbors have received graciously from the legislature the possibility of those sales taxes. One of the other things is a regional significance is that our school district was one of the largest in the area. We have several schools, and we do a lot of pairing and sharing, not only on the high school level, but also on the youth level. So we have a couple of hockey rinks that people from the area use. We have people coming into town to use our soccer fields, our baseball fields, softball fields. And so as a regional significance, Cloquet does take care of the smaller towns in our area, including other counties, including with our industrial park, which we're trying to create jobs for people. And as people know that if one city gets a large amount of jobs, the people pick and choose which cities they can live in. Cloquet, which has a very good school system, often people decide to live in Cloquet. So those are some of the reasons that we feel that this the sales tax is very necessary for us and also would contribute to providing more jobs for our area. Thank you, sir.
You guys are lucky to get it.
Mr. Mayor, there's three different uses of the sales tax. The first one is kind of all recreation-related, swimming pool, veterans park, community center. And then the second one is extension of utilities and improvements associated with the industrial park. But then it says, and debt on bonds issued before final enactment. There's some current bonds on the industrial park you want to use this revenue to pay for. How much is that?
Brian?
Mr. Chair, the amount of the bonds that we've issued are in the area of $2.2 million.
And Mr. Fitchner, you probably should have your name for the record.
Yes, Mr. Chair, committee, I'm Brian Fritzinger, city administrator with the city of Cloquet.
And the 2.2 that have been issued, what year were those issued?
We just issued those here in the past 4 months.
And do we have, to either one of the witnesses, do we have any idea how the three different uses of the tax break out as a total of the $15 million? I mean, how much is recreation, how much is industrial park, and then how much of the 15 would be for bonds related to infrastructure improvements?
Mr. Chair, committee, when you look at the three areas that are identified within our bill, the vast majority of the costs are associated with the park improvements throughout the community. Those improvements, as we look at it, really stem at this point over the past couple of years are really tied to a swimming pool as well as a community center discussion that's currently taking place. We have an outdoor swimming pool that serves a large area, I think, as Mayor Algren has suggested, and we are going through a process right now with the community of analyzing what is the best way to do that pool in terms of an outdoor pool or an indoor community center, which is being discussed. The other items that are identified under the recreation aspect are all components of the community that all of the jurisdictions that have been previously mentioned do utilize in our community. When you look at the other two areas, obviously the most important aspect of our community has been economic development in the business park, and so that's kind of the next largest. And then with the infrastructure improvements, is roughly about $5 million we're estimating as a result of the projects that are proposed there.
Chairman Bach.
Senator Lurie.
Yes, I'd like to go back to your first question, too, regarding the existing 2.2 and bonding, and just remind the committee that they have been trying, Cloquet has been trying to get this local option sales tax passed for 5 years and has been unable to do so to date, and that this really, in my mind, demonstrates their commitment to these projects, that they, you know, went ahead and got started even without this authorization and really would benefit from the ability to gain these extra sources of revenue to finish these projects.
Senator Skoy.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Senator Lurie, or maybe to Mr. Fritzinger. I think a better breakdown would be helpful. I know that traditionally the legislature is not funded a lot of these infrastructure improvements, sewer and water, et cetera. So maybe a little breakdown on what the park developments are going to be and see where we could go with that. The other thought I had, Mr. Mayor, Mayor Algren, you mentioned Fond du Lac, and I represent the White Earth community, and they have negotiated some payment in lieu for some of those services with the city of Manoman. And I was wondering if Cloquet had any contacts or negotiations with Fond du Lac to try to work through some of those cost issues.
Mr. Chair, Senator, we have a great relationship with our Fond du Lac reservation, and we have they're putting in adding on to their casino and putting in $120 million worth of improvement. So we have not entered into any of we're in the process of entering into some agreements with them, but it looks like it's going to be a long-term process at this point in time, especially with their debt service that they're going to be having pretty soon.
Okay, thank you.
Senator Limmer.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Senator Lurie, perhaps your witnesses might be able to answer another series of questions. When we refer to page 2, line 3, we're talking of some of the legitimate expenses that this tax could pay for, the extension of utilities and construction of all improvements associated with a Cloquet Industrial Park. What does all improvements mean? Is this a municipally owned industrial park? Are you building it? Do you have developers that are building it? And when I read construction of all improvements, that's a pretty big opening for someone to use that money to literally build everything on the land. Could you define that for me?
Mr. Chair, Senator Limmer, the business park project and what we're referring there is, yes, it is a city-owned industrial park. It's a 120-acre park that the city purchased from our local development corporation here a couple years back. The definition of all improvements basically means the extension of water utilities, sewer utilities, stormwater improvements, construction of wetlands replacement, as well as curb gutter, streets, those things. That's specifically what we're referring to with all improvements, not necessarily the development of buildings and of that aspect.
So, Mr. Chair,
Senator Limmer.
If one would define that sentence a little better, you might want to suggest after the word all public improvements or all infrastructure improvements, something to that effect that may define it and not give such a wide berth to the use of this money. One of the other questions that I did have is This is my seventh year on the tax committee, and I don't remember us ever putting an excise tax on motor vehicle purchases for the use of a city. And I'm wondering, maybe council could tell me if we ever charge a fee on a purchase of like a car, like this is suggesting, for a municipal purpose. Do we use that? Do we do that?
Mr. Chair, Senator Limmer, in the past, this committee has passed several other motor vehicle excise taxes in conjunction with local option sales tax. If you'd like, I can provide you with a list after committee.
And then that's subject to public approval as well, as a local option sales tax.
Yes, Mr. Chair, it's Senator Limmer.
Part of the point there, I think, Senator Limmer, is by calling it an excise tax, we avoid any violation in the streamlined sales tax. And then the $20 means that the local sales tax is not being assessed to new car purchases.
Mr. Chair, it seems like every time we use motor vehicles as a source of revenue, we commonly refer to it here as a user tax for the purpose of that user to pay for road or infrastructure development. And in this case, we're straying from that classic definition and putting it into recreation expenses for a city. And it's not necessarily going to roads improvement, except for what we find on page two for that industrial park. And I was just kind of curious how many times we pull money away from the purpose of a user tax for road purposes and transit, and now we're diverting the potential of that fund for a user to be used for industrial park development or park purposes, essentially public entertainment in the way of recreation.
Mr. Chairman, if I could just touch on that, one of the reasons why, as I understand over the years as we've talked about the $20, is really comes from the auto dealers themselves and the concerns that if we're placing the full one-half of 1% on the sale of an automobile, that the dollars that they are contributing towards this tax is unreasonable to them. And so the $20 really is an effort to try to kind of cap the impact on those auto dealers that have lots of vehicles going through their lots.
Mr. Chair,
Senator Limmer.
Sir, what does the auto sales industry think of this tax up in your town? Are they for it?
Well, Mr. Chairman, Senator Limmer, the auto dealers, we have one auto dealer in the city of Cloquet, and we have one in Scanlon. And part of the thing is that they did not, in all the years that we've been coming down here to ask for a sales tax, it seems like fairly standard language that the $20 is in there. I think it's in Hermantown, it's in Duluth, and in Two Harbors. One of the reasons is that it would be unfair for an auto dealer to pay a half-cent sales tax on a $20,000 or $30,000 vehicle. And with the competition is right next door, but $20 is something that they pretty much say, you know, that's we can do. So they're not against the sales tax. In fact, that's one of the I'm glad you asked that question, because I know that we've been in contact with the Chamber of Commerce in our area, and they're in favor of the tax. I speak oftentimes because I'm also the court administrator for Carleton County, so I speak at service clubs, and I kind of do a deal both as mayor and court administrator. And all the service clubs are very much in favor of the sales tax, and all the people that I talk to and come in contact with on a daily basis, they think it's fair, especially considering the fact that our whole surrounding area has sales taxes. And as people from the rural areas come to Cloquet, people from Cloquet actually go to Duluth and Hermantown.
Okay. Anything else, members? Mr. Mayor, does the Black Bear Casino pay any kind of an in-lieu payment to the city of Cloquet for, you know, the benefits that they receive from having the city right on their boundary?
Chairman Buck, actually, no. They do have some contracts with Carleton County as far as the police or sheriff's protection. We are going to start negotiating with them a little bit, because with their seven-story casino going up with another 150 rooms, our services, because we have the only ladder truck in the area that can reach the top floor, so we're going to be contacting them to see if they will they'll do something as far as providing some money to the city of Cloquet for that service.
So they pay nothing for, who provides fire protection for them today?
We do. And they, part of the reservations Perch Lake Township, but oftentimes, because we have a full-time fire department, we're there before the volunteer units can get there with mutual aid.
Thank you.
And that would extend to our police department, too, because they have a sizable police department, but that's civil regulatory, and every time that there's someone who would be in lieu of arrest or misdemeanor, felony and gross misdemeanor charges, our officers have to respond and finish out the paperwork.
And they do pay some kind of a payment to Carlton County?
They provide money for one deputy sheriff for the for the reservation area. Actually, the Black Bear Casino is in the township of Twin Lakes, just outside of Carlton. It's probably closer to Carlton than Cloquet, in a sense. They're not within our boundaries of the casino.
But there is some mutual aid requirement between fire departments.
There's some mutual aid requirements between our departments, yes. But as they're full time or they're part time, we're full time. We're mostly especially our ambulance service or ALS first responder. We're going outside the city limits all the time. I have a hunting shack up in Floodwood, and I see the Cloquet ambulance service going up towards Floodwood all the time, which is 30 miles away.
Scary.
So we do take care of the entire area. Our local taxpayers actually provide a lot of services outside our area that they're not paid for by the townships or the other cities.
Mr. Mayor, does your hospital, is that a nonprofit? Does that have a hospital taxing district, or how does that work?
I don't. Brian?
Mr. Chair, the local hospital is a local nonprofit. They do not currently utilize any sort of taxing district at all.
Any other questions, members? If not, Senator Lowry will lay over Senate File 692 for possible inclusion in the committee's omnibus bill. Thank you.
Thank you, Chairman.
Thank you.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, thank you very much.
Senator Erickson Ropes. Senator, welcome to the Tax Committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Glad to be here today. Thank you, members of the committee. I'm Senator Sharon Erickson Ropes from Winona, and I'm here today with our City Administrator, Eric Sorensen from the City of Winona, and also Holly Byron of Flaherty and Hood. And we're here today to present Senate File 1035, which is a request from the City of Winona seeking approval from the legislature to impose a half-cent sales tax at a special election coming up this fall in an amount up to $8 million over the course of 5 years. The sales tax would fund a capital project that would have significant impact to the City of Winona and the region. And it's a construction of an extension between Minnesota State Highway 43 and State Highway 61. And the City of Winona has been working in partnership with MnDOT, and they fully support the program. This particular project would relieve a lot of congestion at the junction of these two state highways, and benefits to the City of Winona would be that it provides a second entrance to the very busy and growing east side of Winona. It only has one access point of entry right now. And we also have a new and growing industrial park on the east end that houses lots of regional manufacturing and employment opportunities. For example, one of the largest, or actually the largest, sheet music manufacturer in the world is in Winona. And the project is also addressing some regional and city safety issues, traffic and access. I would also like to mention that Winona is the second city in Minnesota that has retired their bonds early. So I sure that's something this committee would think was a great thing. Willmar is the other city. But we recently retired a six-year bond at 4 years. And then they did stop that half-cent sales tax instead of carrying it on or rolling it over to another project. So I would put the request before this committee, and my guests would be here to answer any questions.
And Senator, when were the bonds paid off on the previous sales tax? And that tax expired?
2004.
Thank you. Senator Steven.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Senator Erickson Ropes, is this project, is this the city's portion of the state funding for this project? Or I guess I'm kind of unclear why the city should have to undertake this this effort.
Senator Bach, Senator, yes, this would be our portion. This is a project that the legislature and the governor had previously approved in a larger package. Our public said there were too many projects. They were not sure about our priority. What we're doing is bringing back one project that everybody has identified as the project in Winona. As you can see on the map, we would, by this project, take a lot of pressure off of traffic by our hospital. And as Senator Ropes said, we would serve our industrial park better. Both are regional facilities, and we're looking for better access in the industrial case to the interstate, and in the case of the hospital, which just had a $32 million expansion, which is wonderful for our community, but has put a lot of service strain on this area. Our traffic counts are now up to about 24,000 a day on Mankato Avenue, so we're trying to divert traffic in that area for public safety reasons.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Steven.
Thank you. What would be the total expenditure by MnDOT then for the project, or what's the total cost of the project?
I think it's several hundred thousand that they're estimating right now for their portion. Senator Bach, Senator, I think it's several hundred thousand that they're estimating. That was intended to be spent. It's been budgeted for 2007, and that's why we're asking for the right to a fall election so that we maintain the MnDOT commitment.
And what is the state commitment? How much?
Several hundred thousand, as I understand it, Senator Bach.
Senator Dibble, you serve on transportation. Tell us about this.
Well, I don't know about this project. Specifically, I actually have some questions. I'm looking at the map, and I'm hoping you can describe for me exactly what this would pay for. Would it pay for this entire blue?
The stripe it would pay for from 43 into our industrial park. It would take traffic off of Highway 43, which becomes Mankato Avenue, and divert it over into the industrial park area, which is growing exponentially. The green and yellow bar. That's the $5 million expansion of that system. It's intended to divert traffic again.
Oh, so the green and yellow is what we're looking at.
Yes, to take it off of Mankato.
Oh, I see. And Mr. Chair, is this an overpass or just
no.
A surface road?
No, this is would cross Highway 61, and. We would hope in the not-too-distant future the traffic counts would say that semaphores are appropriate.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Langsa.
Mr. Chair, I recall, I don't know, wasn't it over $3 million for Winona at that time? That was part of this project, right? When you talk about the state share, I think you're talking about what was provided in the bonding bill.
Senator Bach, Senator Langseth, you previously gave us authorization for 11 projects. That was a $20 million estimate. The number one project in that bill was this project. And our public said, too many projects, we're not sure what your priorities are, and that did not pass. So we've come back with the one project where there's total community support. And Yes, so this was previously authorized, but it was not. I think you're thinking of our West End of Pelzer Street. You did give us authorization to, and that project is being completed this year. That's the West End of Winona. This is cleaning up traffic congestion on the East End.
Mr. Chairman, as I recall,
there was an overpass involved in that one.
Wasn't there? And I think you were going to be dredging out.
Yes.
And using the fill for that overpass. So I guess I was confused with that project and this one, but apparently they're separate projects.
Senator Bach, Senator Langseth, yes, that that project is the first project in Winona to have a not-at-grade road over the railroad. But this project is simply to divert traffic from 43 and Mankato to our industrial park to take the pressure off of Mankato.
Senator Johnson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just for background, Senator, does the city's portion of this come under a joint powers agreement, or is it separate from?
No. Senator Bach, Senator, this is strictly the city of as was the previous project.
Senator Sabin.
Thank you, Chairman Bach. Then I guess is the extension of Highway 43, is that going to be a new, that's going to be an extension of the state highway, or is that going to be a city road?
Senator Bach, Senator, that would be a city road. It would not change the numbering for Highway 43. It's simply intended to take a lot of traffic off of Highway 43. In and out of Winona.
Is there going to be a new stoplight installed on 61 here, or what does that configuration at the intersection look like?
I'm sorry, Senator.
What does the configuration at the intersection look like where this new street will cross Highway 61? Is there going to be a stoplight there, or what's happening?
Senator Bach, if we had our preference, we would have semaphores put up there immediately. That's not MnDOT policy. They have to see the traffic counts. We think immediately it will be justified, and there will be semaphores put in there.
So what will be there?
Four-way lights. Yeah.
Four-way lights.
Yeah, that's, I think, probably within 3 to 4 years.
And who's going to pay for that?
I'm sure we'll be paying our portion with, as we always do with the state.
Anything else, committee members? If not, Chair, we'll lay over Senate File 1035 for possible inclusion in the omnibus bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Senator Sharon, Senate File 512.
Thank you, Chairman Bach. There seems to be a theme in the things you're listening to this morning. My name is Senator Kathy Sharon. I'm from Senate District 23, and I'm here to present Senate File 512. This is a bill that would give authority to the city of North Mankato to impose a half-cent sales tax to fund five very important capital projects that have regional significance and are important to the development of this community in this part of the state. This half-cent sales tax was approved last year and was included in the omnibus bill that did not pass at the end of the year. What is important for me to ask you to pay specific attention to is that these projects, all of which are important, were approved by the voters in an election in November of 2006. So before you have a handout which will outline each of the projects and its costs specifically. It calls for a half-cent sales tax. It will raise about $375,000 to $400,000 per year. It will be an issue of sales tax revenue bonds in an amount not to exceed $6 million over a 15-year period. And all the projects are long-term capital improvement projects that are important to the development of the area and to the entire region. And I will defer now to the mayor of North Mankato, Mayor Zellmer, and to our city administrator, Wendell Sandy, for the specifics and to answer your questions.
Thank Senator you. Bach and committee, my name is Gary Zellmer. I'm the mayor of the city of North Mankato. We came here last year asking for a similar proposal, and we took to heart the lessons we learned up here. There was several suggestions made to what we could improve our bill on, and I think the main one was to first off go back and ask your voters, will they accept it? And we did put this on the on the last election. With over 70% of the registered voters in North Mankato voting, we had a 65.9% favorable rating on this, or vote on this. So as you can see, it had strong support from the local community to go ahead with it. I'd like to just give you in general some of the areas that we're going to be looking at, and then I'll defer to Wendell to get into the details and be more specific about it. But just a couple things to let you know is, for me, this is a very key piece of my agenda as the mayor of the city of North Mankato. Green space and parks, to me, is one of the essence of a local community. And I stuck my neck out a couple years ago and made the purchase of some additional park land without really having a way of paying for it, and we've been able to scrape by. And at this point, we're able to make the payments on the property and the land, but we are not able to do any of the development and improvements. And this bill that we're asking for in this 0.5% sales tax is going to let us go ahead with the improvements that we'd like to make on the parks. And to give you an idea of the significance of this, one park is a 70-acre parcel that we purchased 3 years ago, 4 years ago on the outside of town that is now almost completely surrounded by development. That park has had a small portion of it developed. And because of another opportunity that came up with Caswell Park, and to be able to purchase another 12 acres, we almost sold off a portion of that park. And to me, that was the wrong way to go. Once you lose that land, you never get it back. So we came up with an innovative plan to dig a lake in the middle of the park, sell that as a wastewater stormwater holding to the developers in the area, take the dirt that we pulled out of that hole, took it over to the local Dakota Meadows School, help them level off 4 soccer fields, and in the process not only improved our park, put a lake in, have a ski hill or a sliding hill with the remainder dirt, and with the dirt that was left over, we've been able to help the school district with 4 new fields. So as you can see, we're using every piece of maneuverability we have and to keep these parks going. But the other major park is Spring Lake Park, which by the name was obviously a lake there, but if you've been there 5 years ago, you wouldn't know it. The depth of the lake was about 1.5 inches across the lake. It was filled in with silt and other droppings from geese and ducks that frequent the park. In the last 5 years, we pulled out over 100 cubic yards of that, made it into a viable lake. This should be the last year we're doing it. That was all done basically with our own crews in times that we had that were available and money that we could save. And thank God we haven't had snow over the last 5 years. We were able to take that money and put it into having our trucks run this. Again, we took that fill and helped build a berm that's reclaiming an old stone quarry now that's being redeveloped. So we're using these in many effective ways. Just as a point of reference on support of this, besides the public, the local Civic and Commerce Association, the Commerce on Commerce, which is our Upper North Mankato Retail Association, supported the Greater Mankato Area Chamber of Commerce, the Greater Mankato Economic Development Authority, the Friends of the Library, which is Blue Earth and Nicollet County. It helps support both of our libraries. Nicollet County, Blue Earth, and all the sports groups, including the adults and the junior groups, youth groups, all went out and helped support it by walking and handing pamphlets out. So as you can see, we've garnered a tremendous amount of support. The people in the community are supporting it. And lastly, I'd like to just kind of give you my local reason I think this is so important is, if you're familiar with Mankato, North Mankato, we're on one side of the river, Mankato's on the other. Mankato's had the sales tax for a number of years. They have almost all the retail shopping in the area, so our people are paying this anyway. They're going across the river buying the products. North Mankato is mostly industrial, heavily printing related, so we get the people coming back during the daytime. For us, this would mean approximately $300,000, of which we're estimating about half of it is going to come from outside regional sources rather than just the local community, much of it coming from Mankato. The other thing is, I just want to bring attention, Caswell Park is probably the greatest or the best softball facility in North Mankato or in Minnesota in the upper Midwest. We were able to acquire 12 more acres to expand that facility. We currently host the girls state high school tournament. We also are currently hosting two national tournaments each year, one of which brings in over 150 teams into the state, most of which are outside the area. Some of them as far away as Japan actually coming in. This is all being supported by our local staff without very little revenue coming in. So this 0.5% sales tax would be able to help pay for the expansion and support of that facility. We really think this is key, and for our future, we really do need to come up with this funding source in order to keep expanding and improve our way of life in North Mankato. With that, I'll pass it over to Wendell, and he can give you more of the breakdown and the details of each one of the projects, and I'd be more than happy to answer any questions after that point.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, I'm Wendell Sandy. I'm the city administrator for the city of North Mankato. We did prepare a handout for today's hearing with an outline of the projects that we're proposing. The first is the $1.5 million local share of the Trunk Highway 14 County State Aid Highway 41 interchange project. This would be the city's share of this project. It's a joint project with MnDOT and Nicollet County, which would provide for the westerly expansion of the city's industrial park and also interchange access to a major residential development that is south of Trunk Highway 14. As Mayor Zellmer referred to, the second project is $2.5 million for the development of regional parks, hiking, and biking trails. We've identified the three major parks in the community as regional in status, Caswell Park, which is the softball facility, Benson Park, and then Spring Lake Park. We would propose to make a number of improvements to those facilities over the long term, and we work very closely with our local Convention and Visitors Bureau in promoting especially Caswell Park as a site for both state, regional, and also as the mayor alluded to, national softball tournaments. We've gotten a very favorable response from the national organizations, and we will have the Senior World Series of Softball at the park in August of 07, and we will have the North American Fast Pitch Association World Series at the park in August of 2008. The third project is expansion of the North Mankato Library. The library was built in June of 2000, or actually opened in June of 2000. It has exceeded all of our expectations in terms of utilization and patronage. Approximately one-third of our patrons do come from outside the immediate area. And in our larger efforts, we have a bookmobile that's operated in conjunction with Blue Earth and Nicollet Counties as our funding partners. We cover the entire two-county area with the bookmobile, including public entities, private schools, homeschools, daycares. As you know, with transportation issues, especially for daycares, the bookmobile is a service that they very much appreciate. So the expansion of the library would provide us for the opportunity to increase our collection and increase the number of programs that are provided. The fourth project is riverfront redevelopment. This is in conjunction with similar efforts that are going on in the city of Mankato. The two communities, along with the two counties, have joined together to create what's called Envision 2020. It's a plan for the next 20 years in the two communities, which includes a significant emphasis on redevelopment of both of the downtown areas that front the Minnesota River. And then the last project is lake improvements in Spring Lake and Benson Lake, which we would use approximately $500,000 for access, aeration, and creation of urban fisheries in both of those locations. And I would be happy to respond to any questions you may have.
Senator Limmer.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mayor, when we talk of that fourth project, Capital Riverfront Development Redevelopment. Could you tell me what that $750,000 would specifically be used for?
We would use that for traffic and infrastructure improvements in the downtown in support of redevelopment projects in that area. We do have one 2.8-acre site in the downtown that we're hoping to attract a major facility to, and some or all of those funds would be used in pursuit of public improvement.
Mr. Chair, specifically, I'm reading, it simply says riverfront development, and for lack of specificity in the language, you're telling me that it would be used for more of the infrastructure and public streets, public utility development for that project?
At least in some measure, in as much as we do not have a specific redevelopment plan for that site, we didn't specify precisely the items to be done. But the City of Mankato, in pursuit of its city center revitalization plan, had previously come to the legislature and gotten authorization for what they also termed riverfront redevelopment, and this was an attempt to coordinate our activities.
Okay. Senator Squire.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Mayor Zellmer, congratulations on passing your referendum. Give me a little lay of the land of what's going on with North Mankato and Mankato. How large is North Mankato in relation to Mankato? Does Mankato have a regional sales tax? Just kind of a little lay of the land down in North Mankato area.
Sure. North Mankato is approximately a little over 12,000. We do not have the sales tax. Mankato does have the regional sales tax, 0.5%. It was just reauthorized again for them, and they had it on the ballot again this year, and they did pass it again for some of the projects, which would include the riverfront redevelopment, some park developments in the river area.
Mankato's about 34,000.
About 34,000? And just up the road a little ways is St. Peter. Do they have one, and kind of how large are they?
St. Peter's about 10,000, Senator, and they do not have local option sales tax.
Okay. Thank you.
Senator Lemire.
Thank you. One more question. Usually when we authorize local option sales taxes, we put an election after the legislation is passed. And pending the outcome of that election, then a local political subdivision can go forward with the tax. Now, I find it unusual. You've already had the election. And did you have any state law passed in order to justify that election? Or how does that work, having an election pending the approval of the legislation? It seems to be in reverse order.
Senator, I think it is in reverse of probably what the normal procedure is. We wanted to take advantage of the general election last fall in terms of the turnout, and we felt that it had been done previously, so it was not totally without precedent, but I would have to concur it is somewhat unusual and the reverse of the normal process.
And Mr. Chair, the wording of that particular election referendum specifically describes this legislation?
It does.
All right.
Anything else, members?
Well, they were here last year.
Senator Sharon, thank you. Chair will lay over Senate File 512 for possible inclusion in the omnibus bill. Thank you.
Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you.
Oh, she's shared with Limmer. Don't share with Limmer.
Senator Olsen. Senate File 109.
No.
General Seen, welcome to the committee.
Senator Bach and members, it's my pleasure to be before you today on Senate File 109. I have with me on my left Mayor Michael Buchheit of Taylor's Falls, and on my right is Chris Ng, who is the Chisago County HRA EDA Director. Taylor's Falls has been recognized by AAA Travel Magazine as the third highest destination for day trips out of the Twin Cities. And it's a most beautiful region, but part of the beauty of the area is also part of the problem, and that is the river. If you cross the bridge over into Wisconsin, I have a letter in my office from Governor Jim Doyle that says, "Welcome to Wisconsin, you Minnesota businesses." Ah, here's copies of it. If we could maybe have this sent out, because it's saying that we can save you up to 50% on your property taxes. We can save up to 40% on your workman's comp and up to 20% on your corporate income tax. So this is kind of the reason that we're here today, and I'm going to have the mayor testify and Chris Ng testify about why we need this bill. Thank you.
Mr. Chair, members, I do appreciate your time today. I know you're all very busy, just like myself. My name is Mike Buchheit. I am the mayor of Taylor's Falls. I'm actually serving in my third term. And Taylor's Falls is seated right in the River Valley area, and we have a population of 1,051. And the latest census information says that we are the eighth poorest city in the state of Minnesota with a population of 500 or greater. As Senator Olsen indicated, we have a tough time. We're competing with the city of St. Croix Falls in Wisconsin. It's just across the bridge, about 1 or 2 minutes away. Our city currently has 28 businesses located downtown. And in the last 5 years, 9 of those businesses have left Taylor's Falls. 5 of those businesses have actually located in Wisconsin. Why? Property taxes. The latest building to leave our city was our bank. They left on December 31st, 2006. Where did they go? St. Croix Falls, Wisconsin. The reason why? Property taxes. And when the bank president contacted me and let me know, he said, "This is nothing personal. I know you've had a bank on your main street for several years, long before the building was built in St. Croix Falls. This is a business decision. It's not a personal decision." We have a property that had a building sitting on it. It was actually built in 1887. It was known as the Liberty Mall, the largest building in our city. And in 2001, January, caught fire, burned to the ground, complete loss. It's now referred to as the Hole. The property has actually changed hands 2 times since it burned to the ground. Nobody has done anything with the property, and when I've talked with the owners, they've said, "Why would we build a building here?" When we first bought the property, we thought, "Oh, it's priced reasonably. We'll put a building here. This would be a good thing for myself and the city." And when they look into it further, they said it costs about $1 million to put a building in that location. The property taxes on a $1 million building in Taylor's Falls would be about $50,000 per year. Why would you want to build a building in Taylor's Falls when you can put the exact same building in St. Croix Falls and pay $25,000 a year? The other challenge that we have is we have absolutely no industrial park. So if you said, "What does your tax rate look like?" It's the highest in Chisago County. And it's not because we've been just spending money left and right. We're very conservative. We take a good close look at our budget, and we spend our money wisely. We know we have to invest in ourselves to improve our city so that we attract businesses to our city. That's why we've put in new street lights to dress up the city. We've been adding new sidewalks. We've been paving streets. We've actually built a riverwalk area with a pedestrian footbridge that will hopefully open this year. It's a 40-foot long structure all built by volunteers, and the whole purpose is for our community to enjoy the River Valley area, to attract tourists to town so that when they come here, they're going to enjoy themselves. But the problems we have with our business is, why would you want to have a business in Taylor's Falls when you can move to St. Croix Falls, look at the same river that we look at, and pay half the property taxes? So what I'm asking for is for you to partner with me. I need you to help level the playing field so that I can compete with Wisconsin. So thank you again for your time, and with that, I'm going to pass the microphone to Mr. Chris Ng.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, good morning, and thank you for allowing us to come and testify before you today. I wish I really could come here to tell you that the glass is half full, but the truth is that we've got some serious challenges we're facing in Chisago County and in Taylor's Falls. Although Chisago County is one of the four, by some sources, the fourth fastest growing in the county, the growth is not happening on the commercial and industrial side. It's happening on the residential side. Chisago County is a bedroom community to the Twin Cities. If you look at our overall market values, as a percentage of the overall, only 6.4% of our market values is commercial and industrial. The average for the state is double that. It's 12.32%. And if you look at the commercial industrial market values for Taylor's Falls, it's 7%, whereas for overall cities in the state of Minnesota, the average is 16%. So as you can see, residential taxpayers pay the greatest burden when we come to taxing. We simply don't have the business base to spread the taxes out, and we're losing the battle. As I mentioned, we're a bedroom community. Two out of three working residents in Chisago County commute outside of the county every day to work in the Twin Cities area. And that also hurts our existing businesses because they're not shopping locally anymore. They're stopping on the way home in Forest Lake, White Bear Lake, Bugo to shop. And our hardware stores, our grocery stores, our service businesses in downtown business districts are really, really taking a loss. But our most disturbing challenge is that companies are leaving Chisago County for Wisconsin. And as the mayor indicated, we've lost five businesses in the last 5 years. And the exact reason for it is because of the letter that we handed out. The state of Wisconsin is over here on a regular basis soliciting our businesses and asking them to come on over, and we'll save you a whole bunch of money on property taxes, workers' comp taxes, corporate income taxes. Aside from that, they have a lower sales tax and cheaper land, and they will offer incentives. If you look at the Osceola, Wisconsin Industrial Park, there are 21 businesses in that park. 17 of them are from Minnesota. So as you can see, our tax base is extremely lopsided, and it's costing us more money. There are studies that show that for every dollar a residential taxpayer pays in taxes, they receive about $1.17 in services. For businesses, for every dollar a business pays, they receive about 27 cents in services. And so people will talk about business subsidies as a negative thing, but the truth is that businesses subsidize residential properties in the state of Minnesota, and certainly the case in Chisago County. So we're here today to ask for your consideration in helping us level the playing field with Wisconsin, helping us keep our existing businesses, but then also hopefully help us attract some new businesses that may consider moving back here from Wisconsin. Thank you.
Senator Johnson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Senator Olstein, Mayor, and Mr. Eng, I don't not support your bill. Have a border town, and all border towns have these type of problems. One thing Wisconsin does that we don't do is have higher property tax on the residents. So you're going to have to, in your own way, try and level the playing field, and I think you've done a really good job with your tourism industry that you're going to have to promote. Good luck.
Thank you.
Mr. Chair, Senator Johnson. The tourist industry, unfortunately, is pretty seasonal. You know, the fall leaves along the St. Croix River are gorgeous, but when they're gone, you know, we have some skiing up there, but it is a very seasonal, and it's very hard the rest of the year for the merchants along Main Street in Taylor's Falls. But I also think that Chris Ng pointed out Osceola Business Park. It's been almost it's been a tragedy seeing all the businesses that have left Minnesota to just, you know, why build their business in Chisago County? They just cross the bridge, and they have all these other benefits. So I think we're looking at trying to level the playing field, and I guess that's really why we're here. Thank you.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Limmer.
Mr. Chair, I'm looking over this letter that was passed out from the governor of Wisconsin. He's claiming that, and I'm assuming that he's comparing Wisconsin to Minnesota, savings of up to 50% on industrial commercial property tax, 40% on worker comp, and 20% on corporate income tax. Now, when you compare that with the Dakotas that don't have corporate income tax, I'm not sure where they are on industrial and commercial property taxes, but they've been they're promoting a very, very public campaign. I get copies sent by business owners in my district to me all the time, every time South Dakota tries to lure businesses away from Minnesota. And I don't know if they're successful at that or not. I know it certainly raises a lot of questions, certainly for real estate commercial developers. They claim that it's quite a competitive inducement from other states that are trying to pull business owners away from Minnesota. this probably should give us pause to perhaps consider revisiting our commercial industrial property tax as well as our worker comp taxes. I hear they're rising on worker comp rates in Minnesota, but I don't know what the total package is. What do we get for that high cost? But I know we're not prepared to do that in this committee on worker comp rates, but it probably is something that we should consider revisiting sometime just to see, are we really losing jobs? Are we gaining jobs? How many jobs could we have if we were competitive with states like Wisconsin?
Senator Limmer, how many people do you think drive from Hudson, Wisconsin, into the Twin Cities every day to go to work?
I don't have any clue, Mr. Chair. I don't live on that side of town, so I don't know.
I think it's quite a few.
Well, Mr. Chair, that, you know, they don't, city or the state of Wisconsin doesn't have a major metropolitan area on the western end of their state accumulating 2.5 million people either. So there is a little bit of a demographic that can't be ignored as well.
Senator Larson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Senator Olsen. How do you anticipate in the authorization section, it says you may designate all or part of the city for the border development zone. What is the intention of the city, and don't we create similar inequities by giving some businesses tax reductions and some not? Just seems to create more inequities on the Minnesota side.
Mr. Chair, members, the downtown area is all located within a three-block area. As far as the businesses that would be able to participate in it, I would see all businesses participating in it. There would be no reason for a business to say, no, we have no interest in participating in it.
And Mr. Chair,
General Larson,
Senator Olsen and Mayor and Mr. Ng, not knowing what businesses are in the downtown or on the main street, I mean, are there businesses that it wouldn't be feasible for them to move and that wouldn't fit the description of what you're trying to get at here? That, and I understand you're being universal about its application, but you know, perhaps where there's a certain amount of industrial equipment or something that wouldn't be desired to move, there wouldn't be enough benefit. I guess I'm curious. We're providing tax relief, and does everybody fit the description that you're trying to target here?
Thank you, Mr. Chair, Senator. That's a good question. We have one commercial business downtown that's actually an industrial type business within a certain area. The rest of them are all retail. It would be very easy for them to pack up the cash register or the shelving and move across the river. Really what we're hoping to do is to allow the existing businesses an opportunity to compete when it comes to cash flow. As Senator Olsen mentioned, the businesses really, really take a hard toll in the wintertime. In the summertime, we have good visitors, but that's a short-term thing. They have to pay the mortgage year-round. They have to pay their financing for their equipment and whatever types of assets they have year-round. They really only have about 3 months to make about 12 months' worth of cash flow to keep the business alive, and that's one of the major challenges downtown Taylor's Falls. Whereas if we were able to lower the taxes across the board for everybody in the downtown area, I think we could compete with Wisconsin, not have to continue to see the businesses cross the river to take advantage of the tax benefits. Additionally, you know, we've even looked at the opportunity for Job Z. Would Job Z be something that would work in the downtown area? And really, it doesn't fit with what we're proposing here because the city is working with such a limited budget already. It costs as much to replace a water main, a one-mile strip of water main in Taylor's Falls as it does in Woodbury, but they have nowhere near the resources that a city of Woodbury size does. Same with police protection and fire protection. And Job Z, again, won't work for retail. So we're looking at whatever mechanisms we can put in place to help kind of balance that playing field, but, again, not give up a whole lot of resources, very limited resources that the city has to work with.
Senator Bach and Senator Larson, if I can follow up on that. Chris Ng was very successful working to take – or to keep two big businesses in Minnesota, and that's Polaris Industries and Anderson Windows, who utilize Job Z And Polaris relocated their research and development facility in Wyoming, and you know, with a commercial payroll of about $28 million a year. And then Anderson Windows located their extrusion plant for their renewal windows in North Branch. Both of these businesses were going to be in Wisconsin, and it was just some quick maneuvering at the end, and actually working with the governor's office and the JobZ program that they were able to stay in Minnesota, and you know, luckily they're in Chisago County. The other thing is that, as the mayor alluded to, Taylor's Falls does have some land and no real industrial park, and I think that possibly part of this money might be towards a business that would be willing to locate, you know, a manufacturing type business. I've gone to a number of city council meetings over the years there, and I suspect they'd be open to that kind of development also.
Senator Johnson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. The moment has kind of passed, but it sounded like you were opening the reciprocity can of worms there for a minute.
I don't serve on higher ed, Senator Johnson, but Senator Saban.
Excuse me, Mr. Chairman, that just doesn't apply to education. We can do it in other forms. I think the former chair tried it a little bit.
I wonder if they'd share any of their gas tax with us. Senator Saban.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I seem to remember last year, maybe it was 2 years ago, that the city of Taylor's Falls came to the legislature seeking additional local government aid, and I don't remember if you were successful in getting that additional local government aid. Looks like you're
Mr. Chair, members, if you're referring to the local government aid in the aiding for the rescue services to the interstate park, and the answer to that is we were unsuccessful in securing a permanent fix for providing emergency services for the interstate park. We do, however, continue to provide that emergency service. We're just not being paid for it.
And Mr. Chair and Mr. Mayor, are you seeking that legislation again this year for that additional funding?
Mr. Chair, members, that is something that we have hopes that our senator will bring forward, and I believe is in the process of working with the DNR for some discussion to resolve that issue.
Senator Sandra.
Thank you. Mr. Chair, and perhaps to Senator Osteen or to either one of the witnesses, really, I just want to probe a little bit further into the JobZ and the feelings that it just wouldn't apply or work there. Can you just kind of carry that discussion a little further?
Mr. Chair and Senator, thank you for that question. JobZ has been a valuable tool for Chisago County. We have added about 450 new jobs to Chisago County, which is, again, for us a big thing because most of our workforce is commuting outside of Chisago County to work in the Twin Cities every day. And for the two companies that Senator Olsen mentioned, for Anderson Windows and Polaris Industries, we have added more than $25 million in new investment in our county. I am presently working with a company from Wisconsin, again, that's looking at a JobZ as a way to lure them back to Minnesota. They were, again, a Minnesota company that moved across the border, and we're hoping to have the chance to bring that company back here. But again, because this is a downtown and primarily a retail business sector that we're working with in Taylor's Falls, I don't believe the JobZ is a good fit for what we're proposing today.
Okay, thank you.
Senator Skoy.
Oh, thank you, Mr. Chair. And I'm glad that you brought up the Senator Saban, the issue of the just because I'm curious, what was the dollar amount for the local government aid increase that we requested a couple years ago? Do you remember that? It was a relatively small adjustment, wasn't it?
I believe it was $30,000 a year, and that was to provide rescue service for the state park, which lies totally within the boundaries of Taylor's Falls. It's very unique in the state that they have a state park totally within their city limits, so they have kind of a double whammy there where they've lost tax revenue from that, and there is the payment in lieu of taxes, but also they do provide a service and not much compensation for it, if any.
Mr. Chair, I remember the discussion, and I thought your case was pretty well made, and I believe the Senate did include that, but we had trouble in the other body. But, you know, Senator Olsen, maybe we'd want to take another look at that if you want to visit. We'd be happy to visit with you about that.
Thank you.
Else, committee members? Not Senator Olsen will chair lays over Senate File 109 for possible inclusion in the omnibus bill.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Senator Bonner, Senate File 577.
Hello, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. I'm here today with Ms. Merrill King from the City of Minnetonka, and we're here to request a refund of $140,000, and this refund is due to the City of Minnetonka being unclear with regard to the process of having a sales tax exemption on capital equipment associated with the construction of a water facility. So I will, at this point, turn it over to Ms. King, and she will take you through what happened for the City of Minnetonka. And thank you for hearing this bill this morning.
Chairman Bach and committee members, first I want to apologize for my boss, John Gunyu, who had planned to be here this morning, but because of an unforeseen family emergency, was not able to come. So, again, my name is Merrill King. I'm the finance director for the City of Minnetonka. And this bill is simply trying to get a refund in which we, under current law, would have been eligible for. We contracted for the construction of a $7.5 million water treatment plant in April of 2004 and began construction in May. And we weren't aware, about several months into construction, that we actually had to have included within our contract, with the contract, the builder, some kind of provision that provides a purchasing agent relationship with that contractor. And at that point, we called the Department of Revenue and were advised that it was too late, that it had to have been before we started construction, and we were no longer eligible. And so what we're asking here, because of the confusing administrative procedures, which my understanding both from the Department of Revenue and from the Department of Finance and other cities, that it's not uncommon that the administrative procedures are a bit confusing, that this will happen often, that you begin construction before you realize you didn't set it up correctly in order to be eligible for this refund. So we are just simply asking, we completed construction in January 2006, that we get that refund after the fact, retroactively. And right now we have $140,000 is what our builder has given us in background to support that refund. And I'm open to any questions.
I'm a little confused. Council, can you tell me how they would have been exempt for construction of this facility under current law?
Mr. Chair, if I could just ask the witness a question. Is this a waste recovery facility?
No, ma'am. Chairman Bach, Ms. Allen, this is a water treatment facility. So it actually produces water for sale and consumption of the public.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Bonner.
It's my understanding that they wouldn't be tax exempt for the entire construction of the project, rather just for the capital equipment for the project, that it was a capital equipment issue?
Now I understand, Senator.
Thank you.
Seems like a good use for some one-time money.
Thank you very much, Senator Bach.
Senator Dibble.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm curious to know more about what the larger issue is. You alluded to there being some confusion in how cities are made aware of this and would anticipate absence of witnesses in either procedure or policy that we can expect more cities to encounter this circumstance. Can you?
Chairman Bach and Senator Dibble, in fact, the League of Minnesota Cities actually has some language they're going to be introducing this session that addresses that problem because it is common, and not just among cities, but apparently small businesses are eligible for this as well. And it is confusing, and it's not uncommon that people come back and seek that refund after the fact and realize that they had not set it up correctly.
Sure.
Senator Dibble.
I still don't know what's confusing. Is the department's practice confusing, or is the language of the statute confusing?
My understanding and the way the League of, excuse me, Chairman Bach and Senator Dibble, my understanding is the way the League of Minnesota Cities has chosen to address this is that not only the final user of the manufacturing facility, but also those that purchase the facility. So the fact that I mean, most cities are not going to construct a major technical facility such as this themselves. So you actually have to set something up. You think you're going to be exempt for it and be able to come back and apply for the refund. But the reality is, because the purchaser of the equipment, you're not the first-hand purchaser. You've got somebody purchasing it for you. So it becomes technical in terms of setting that up. And we were not aware that we had to set that up in the contract.
Mr. Chair, I see Gary Carlson hovering in the back. Maybe he wants to...
Mr. Carlson, do you have a bill coming forward on this subject?
Yes, he does.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Squire.
Mr. Chair and Senator Dibble, I think that the governmental unit gets the tax exemption, and they have to transfer that tax exemption to the contractor, as the contractor is the one doing the purchasing of the equipment. And that transfer didn't happen timely is what I'm gathering.
And, Mr. Chair, I understand that. I'm just wondering where our intervention is best. Focus.
Mr. Carlson?
Mr. Chair, Senator Dibble, we are working on some language that actually was run by the Department of Revenue, and it would clarify that you don't have to be the purchaser and the user of the equipment. That's really where the confusion comes into play. Current statutes require that you must purchase and use. Many of our cities and some small businesses, in fact, use a third-party contractor, and if that contractor purchases the equipment, technically, unless you follow a very prescribed set of rules, you would not be eligible for the refund. So we are working on language to do that, and we'll have a bill introduction and hopefully a hearing in this committee in the very near future.
Great. Thank you.
Senator Johnson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And to avoid confusion, the purchaser, in your language, the purchaser isn't going to get the exemption also.
Mr. Chair. Senator Johnson, no, it would only be eligible for the person that ultimately uses the property. And the Department of Revenue has looked at this, and they may have a few comments as well when we do get the bill draft done. But, no, it would only be one exemption that would be eligible, and that would be for the ultimate user of the equipment.
Mr. Carlson, how do we make sure that the contractor passes those savings along in the competitive bidding process?
Mr. Chair, I would hope that it would just simply transfer through and lower cost of purchasing the capital equipment itself. I will advise our cities to look at their contracts with third-party construction managers to make sure that they do have a lower cost that doesn't reflect a higher sales tax cost. But truly, what we're trying to do here is provide the refund to anybody that is purchasing the capital equipment that would otherwise be eligible. But state statute does have a restriction in it right now. So it's a fairly simple fix, but we'll wait till we get the bill introduction to bring it to your attention.
Anything else, members? Not, Chair lays over Senate File 577 for possible inclusion in the omnibus bill.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair.
Thank you.
Senate File 392, members, comes to us from the town of Crane Lake up on the edge of Voisers National Park. And the situation there is the town would like to purchase some land within its corporate limits. And the land is owned by the U.S. Forest Service. And the U.S. Forest Service will not sell the land, but they are willing to enter into an agreement where the town can go out and purchase some other land and then do an exchange for the land that's within the town of Crane Lake. So what the bill does is allows them to incur the additional debt, which we believe today the appraisal on the property is about $150,000. But we've got a higher number in the bill because of the Forest Service appraisal policy. They only honor appraisals for a certain period of time. So by the time the town actually gets around to entering into the agreement with the Forest Service, we may need a new appraisal on the property. So the number is actually higher. Allows the town to increase their debt limit without subjecting this purchase to the town's debt limit. I think that explains what we're trying to accomplish here. Mr. Sirkenek, anything to add?
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, my name is Gary Sirkenek. I represent the town of Crane Lake. This is a multi-party land exchange involving private individuals, the U.S. Forest Service. We're purchasing the land from Minnesota Power. It's actually on the far edge of St. Louis County. It's land that the Forest Service desires will then trade for land, which is in the center of Crane Lake, which Crane Lake currently rents from the Forest Service for their fire hall, for their the phone company rents part of it. It's where the town needs to develop, and the town has engaged in a long-term planning process with the University of Minnesota landscape architectural students and staff, and so they have a plan. This is part of a multi-year program they've been working on. They've been working on the land exchange for 4 years with the Forest Service already, and the person in charge at the Forest Service hopes she can get it done by the time she retires. She was 25. So it's a long process to go through. The town itself has been levying $10,000 a year in its budget to help fund the activities associated with this planning process and land exchange. The amount that is going to be raised through the levy and then paid off through this bond over a number of years is roughly the same amount, so there'd be no net tax increase. Right now, a resident on a $100,000 home in the town of Crane Lake would be paying about $20 to support this activity.
Senator Johnson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, it sounds like Mr. Cervenek might have said it wrong, but the way I understood it is he's swapping land for land they already own. He's swapping the forestry land in town for forestry land they already own.
Senator Johnson, the town is going to go out and buy some parcels of land from Minnesota Power. That's what they need this money for. And then the Minnesota Power land, once it becomes town of Crane Lake land, outside of the city, they then will swap that land with the Forest Service land inside of the town. So the money is being used to purchase land outside the town that then will be exchanged.
And, Mr. Chairman, for more clarification, the land they're going to purchase is owned by?
Minnesota Power. I believe it's all owned by Minnesota Power. Is that correct?
That's correct, Mr. Chairman.
And, Mr. Chairman, so far, how are the negotiations going with Minnesota Power?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Johnson, we have a purchase agreement with Minnesota Power.
Any other questions, members? The chair lays over Senate File 392, the first engrossment for possible inclusion in the committee's bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members.
Members, I believe that concludes our agenda for today. The division, I believe, is going to meet tomorrow. And the full committee will meet again on Thursday, and we're going through another list of local bills like this. So see you Thursday. It's Quinny's adjourned. Yeah.